Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. Michiganders are aging, and they are aging all over the state, but they are particularly getting older on average here in Southeast Michigan. Wayne, Oakland, and Macomb counties are seeing our population age in much more dramatic ways than in the rest of the state. And that older population really needs help. We've never fully had self-sufficient kinds of support for the aging population. We demand care from those around us to help us through life. And while that may be scary for some, it's a perfectly normal transition. But that's not how it's treated. In this country, we do so little to help people who need care and to help those who are tasked with giving care. Caregivers get less money, are often not unionized, are not valued for the care that they're providing, and in many cases, end up working for free. And so a lot of them can't afford the care that they are giving. Caregiving takes a toll, and like everything else, the work disproportionately falls on our most vulnerable. Women, and particularly women of color, are tasked far more often with providing care than other members of our population. A new Detroit News report titled "Caregivers in Michigan Are Reaching a Breaking Point" shines a light on how these folks are struggling and trying to make it through in Detroit and the metro area. The piece delves into the inner lives of caregivers and by doing so asks, why do we have the system we do? Why don't we provide more care for the people who are offering care to others like they do in so many other wealthy countries? To answer this, we've got the two reporters who wrote about caregiving in Michigan for the Detroit News with us. Haley Harding is a data reporter for the Detroit News. Haley, welcome to Detroit Today.
Thank you so much.
And also with us is Sarah Rahal. She is a city reporter for the Detroit News. Sarah, welcome to Detroit Today.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah. So, Haley, I'll start with you. Tell us how bad this is. Draw us a picture of the caregiving situation here in Michigan. How much are they struggling? What is the scale of this crisis?
I mean, I think that if you talk to any caregiver who is really putting in the hours and putting in the work here, I think they can very easily tell you that it's bad. Okay, from what we know, as you are, have already said, caregivers, particularly looking in Metro Detroit, the survey we did looked at 500 caregivers in Metro Detroit and another 500 in Western New York. And what we found is that, as you said, caregivers are disproportionately women. They're disproportionately people of color. A lot of these people are, you know, spending money they don't have. The average caregiver is spending more than $7,000 to give care. And a lot of them are just exhausted. Okay, they're paying out of pocket for things. They are working full-time jobs to keep their families afloat outside of giving care. It's an exhausting task.
And this has been made a little worse by some of the policy decisions that we've made over the last couple of years. Haley, talk about why this isn't getting better and how it's getting worse.
So a lot of the issues that we face in Michigan come from the fact that seeing is that people have a hard time accessing resources. And when they do access resources, they might not necessarily be the best resources for that particular person. Like, we have systems in place, like private groups that Sarah has written a lot about, that can support people. But a lot of times, like, those groups can't like cover every need. And so that what we found is that other states maybe have more comprehensive programs that are the result of investing a lot of money for a long time into taking care of, it's not only our aging population, it's adults with disabilities, it's a variety of, like, statistically speaking, we know that every person at some point or another is either going to be giving care or needing care. And other states such as Washington and Minnesota have done a great job of recognizing that and funding solutions for that, like, that are taking care of caregivers, acknowledging the problems, creating support groups. And some of that stuff we're just not seeing here in Michigan.
Sarah, as I said in the open, caregivers are disproportionately women, poor people, and of course, people of color. Let's talk about what the day-to-day looks like for the people who are providing that care. What kinds of situations do they find themselves in? Do they work part-time or full-time and then take care of family members the rest of the time? Give us a sense of how this works.
Yeah, a lot of these people, I would say, the ones we talk to especially, are doing this full-time, if not part-time, if they're able to have a job. It depends on the living situation that they're in. A lot of the people that they're caregiving for may need more assistance than they can even provide. And that can take a huge toll on these people, especially if a financial toll. If they're not able to work, they are possibly utilizing whatever Social Security benefits that senior may have to take care of them. And in other cases, that may not be enough, especially if you're dealing with a senior who has dementia or Alzheimer's. That can take not only a financial toll to receive help, but an emotional toll on yourself, as many caregivers that are in home are related to that person. You know, they didn't choose to have this happen to them, but also they did step up to the plate and are doing what they can to take care of them. This means that a personal sacrifice in their own life to not be able to leave the house whenever they want to. They need a babysitter almost to make sure that that person doesn't fall or get up and try to change themselves, or so forth, or even start cooking, you know. Potentially people who have dementia don't remember what day it is. And it can be very, I'd say taxing on them, but also require a daily routine that they will establish once they get into the habit of caregiving.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm talking with Haley Harding and Sarah Rahal. They're both reporters at the Detroit News, responsible for a recent report titled Caregivers in Michigan Are at a Breaking Point. We're talking about that breaking point, the stress and pressure that is on people who provide care, oftentimes for free, sometimes to family members, in an environment where the population is aging and more people need care. And at the same time, of course, our institutions are not providing the support for that aging population or for the people who provide the care. We want to hear from you during the conversation as well. Call and tell us if you are a caregiver or a care recipient here in Michigan. What kind of assistance do you need? Tell us about what your pay is like. Are you paid at all? Do you have any supports to help elders or children in your family? And what would help you out? What kinds of policies would you support that would give you more to lean on, more to sort of buttress this care that you are providing? Especially want to hear from folks who are in the situation where they're providing care for an elderly relative. More and more people, I think, find themselves in that position and have few choices about what that care looks like or how to provide it. There isn't often money to be able to do it, so you end up doing it yourself. Give us a call and tell us what that looks like on a day-to-day basis. As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we can work you into the conversation that way. Before we get to our listeners, Haley, I want to talk about why we don't have supports for caregivers like you find in other wealthy countries. I mentioned in the open that, you know, if you go almost anywhere else in the Western world, this looks really different. What is it that's holding us back here?
I think one of the biggest things is that in my conversations with leaders in other states, that they've just noticed that if sometimes it seems that leaders try to, and this is not just Michigan, this is happening all over the country. Minnesota and Washington State are at the top of like AARP's caregiving rankings. But we're seeing this all over the country, that the states just aren't prepared to support caregivers. They are not prepared to support those receiving care. Okay, and the problem here is that a lot of times states, I guess, are just hoping the problem goes away. I don't understand really the logic behind that, because we know we have an aging population in the United States. We know that, like I said earlier, every person at some point in their life is likely to be in a position where they are either giving care or receiving care, or perhaps some combination of both, and not acknowledging the problem and not working towards solutions on the problem does not make the problem go away. And we're seeing that time and time again, that states are choosing to focus in other areas. And there's a lot of important things to consider, obviously, when you are building a budget for a government or whatever. But I think it would be to the benefit of everyone to acknowledge what caregivers do as well. Because as we know, caregivers are, and I can say this for Michigan, AARP has estimated that in Michigan, caregivers do $15.1 billion worth of work every year, which is the result of 1.1 billion hours of caring. Okay. And that's just between 1.3 million people. Okay. Caregivers who are unpaid and are doing this work are putting billions of dollars into our economy. We know this. And we know that if they stop doing that work, these people have to go somewhere. Okay. They would maybe some of these loved ones would go to nursing homes or maybe a variety of other places. But if we do not support this, like, effectively billion-dollar, I don't want to call it an industry. It's not an industry, but it's billions of dollars for our economy that people are doing for free. If we don't support them, they're going to burn out, and they're not going to be able to do it forever. And that's not fair or right for anyone.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, we are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll continue this conversation with Haley Harding and Sarah Rahal. We'll also get to you on the phones and on Twitter, Alberta and Felicia in Detroit. You're going to be up first. There are other calls coming in already, but if you want to join, 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today.
WDET is your place for open dialogue.
The music you love.
Real news and in-depth analysis.
And cultural experiences. The sound of Detroit.
101.9 WDET is your public radio station.
This is Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. Our guests right now are Haley Harding and Sarah Rahal. They're reporters for the Detroit News, who recently wrote a report called Caregivers in Michigan Are at a Breaking Point. That's what we're talking about, is caregiving, as the population here, especially in Southeast Michigan, continues to age quite a bit, and people need more care than they used to. Who's providing that care? Are they being paid? Are they being paid fairly? Do they have the kinds of job protections and support that would make sense for people who are taking care of our aging population? The answer in too many cases is no. Lots of people just kind of handling this on their own. We want to hear from you about your experience with this issue. Are you somebody who is providing care or receiving care here in Michigan? Talk about the kind of assistance that you need. Talk about pay. Are you paid at all? Do you have any supports to help the people that that you're working with? As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we will include you that way. I want to start today with Felicia in Detroit. Felicia, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a comment towards everything. I was a caregiver for my son. My son is disabled. He's legally blind with cerebral palsy and a spastic quadriplegic. Mm. And here in the state of Michigan, I can't be his caregiver and be his legal guardian And because of that fact, I can't live off of his $750 a month check, which meant I had to put him in a home so that someone else can care for him, so that I can get out here and be able to, excuse me,
it's okay,
so that I can be able to afford to live. And it's not fair. My son is 30 years old, and he's in a home being taken care of by someone else when I would love to be the one to take care of my own son. But because he's disabled and I don't have any assistance, there are no programs out here to help families like myself. I'm stuck with having to have him being cared for by others. It's not fair.
Felicia, first of all, I'm very sorry about that situation. And obviously, we can all hear how emotional this is for you, and completely understand and empathize. You said something at the beginning that I guess I don't know enough about. You said that you're his legal guardian, which means you can't be his caregiver. Can you talk just a little more about what that means?
Sure. So when someone is disabled and they can't make decisions on their own, they have to have a legal guardian that's appointed by the court.
Mm-hmm.
So here in Michigan, because of the fact that I'm his mother, I can't be his caregiver and get paid to be his caregiver and be his legal guardian.
I see.
I can be one or the other. I can't be both. When I'm the one that was taking care of him, I'm the one that, even though he's in a home right now, if he was with me, I will still do things that they don't even get paid for.
Felicia, I'm really glad you called, because I think the situation you're describing is an important point in this conversation. But I'm also glad that you reached out to share your story with our listeners. Obviously we wish you all the luck with that situation. It does sound like a very fraught situation, and one that just doesn't have a lot of answers. Haley Harding, I'll give you a chance to respond here to what Felicia's talking about and this rule that she's talking about, which in some ways makes some sense, but I think her case shows that it puts some parents, at least, in a really, really precarious situation.
Yeah, Felicia, I think it's very clear to just hear you talk about how much you love your son, and I really appreciate that you called in to talk about it. This is something that we've heard from a lot of different caregivers, is that the way that these rules interact with each other often do not serve to benefit the caregiver. Maybe they benefit the taxpayer, depending on who you're asking. But I know you're not alone in this, and I wish I could make this better for you right in this moment, but I know you're not alone in this. That's something that I can offer you right now, is that we've heard from a lot of different caregivers who have had a similar situation where they can't, you know, take care of their wife necessarily, or they've had to make very similar decisions. And it's not fair, and it takes a toll on people that I think is not maybe discussed a lot or not understood a lot. Because for a lot of people, there's a lot of shame that comes with that decision to have to put a loved one in someone else's care because the way that the rules play out.
Yeah, yeah. Sarah, do you have anything to add to this this particular situation? And again, this conundrum that Felicia finds herself in.
Felicia, I just wish there were more resources for you. We've seen some things that are available for older adults with disabilities, but not any that are for under the age of 65, even. I wish you the best of luck. And if we do find a solution for you, we will reach out to you.
Yeah. Felicia, really appreciate, again, the call and you sharing your story, and wish you all the luck with your son. Next up is Martha in Livonia. Martha, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi.
When I heard the caregiving, my caregiving right now, if I don't know if you hear him in the background here, is a 6-month-old grandson.
Mm.
And you know, if we don't have childcare for little guys, and I know this is at the other end of the age spectrum, but what I see it as, it's looked at as women's work. That's drudgery work or you know, and then when you said how other countries do it, other countries also have childcare provided for in industrialized large countries.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry I didn't hear the beginning of your program.
That's okay. Martha, I would want to give you a chance to talk a little more about what that's like in your family and how you ended up in this role.
I'm a retired child care provider myself. I did taught preschool for a number of years. I'm over 65. There is no place for this little 5-month-old to go and her, you know, time that she could have off. I stopped and had my three children, and couldn't get back into the workforce after you do that. You know, even though it was teaching, enough had changed. They felt I was too old. Anyway, I ended up subbing and doing other things, but, then I didn't want that to happen to my daughter. You can't stop a career and then get back into the workforce.
Hmm.
So, but I see this as, you know, and there's childcare for this child once he gets to walking age. So it's not an endless sight as I know, those that are dealing with aging parents and aging adults. I've dealt with that as well.
Yeah.
But what I see, it's those quiet people that, we're not quiet. It's like, we just get up in the morning and this is what we're going to do.
Mm.
And we do it because we love what we do. I get the cute little sneezes and the coos and everything, but I know it's hard work caring for an aging adult as well. But it's that hard work thing. I don't know why. It's the left to those that have a big heart, and we need to know that we're all going to end up at that age at some point. And and you know, my husband used to work out at the airport, and you know how many times I came home and he'd say, you know, we're going to make a world class airport, and this is going to be world class, and we come home and we have third world caring for our aging adults and our youngest citizens. Yeah. And we need to all get together on this.
Yeah.
And
Martha, I really appreciate the call. And again, you're sharing your story in that situation. I mean, this is at the other end of things, Haley, as Martha points out, but it falls squarely into the question of caregiving and how we manage it. In a country where there's just not a lot of support.
Yeah, and I think Sarah is the better one to speak to. It's called the sandwich generation, or the sandwich caregivers, when you are finding yourself caring for both older folks and children at the same time. And I will let her speak to that. But I do want to say, you made a great point in that it is a lot of times women. The study that we wrote about, or the survey that we wrote about, we found that it's almost 2-to-1, the number of female caregivers. And this is specifically looking at people caring for adults over 18. So not quite the same as the situation you're in, but the numbers really stuck with me because we found almost 2-to-1 caregivers are female over male, which I think is really a statement, as you said, to when we think about who a caregiver is, who are we thinking about? And a lot of times the caregivers are women, and I think that's very interesting. But I think Sarah can speak a lot more to the kinship care aspect of this.
Yeah. Go ahead, Sarah.
You know, Martha, I'm so happy you called in, because when we first started working on this story, it was almost like kinship caregivers ran to our door, if that makes sense. Do you remember, have you ever been familiarized with the term kinship caregiver? Has anyone called you that?
I think, is Martha, Martha, are you still there?
Sorry.
Yeah, I'm here. I just, I don't remember that. I don't recall hearing kinship care.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So the part of the problem is that a lot of, you know, people don't even recognize that kinship caregiving is a thing, that you don't have to just caregive for older people, but you can also caregive for people who you didn't birth, that people that, you know, just kind of ended up on your doorstep and, excuse me, you stepped up to take care of them. And people like yourself need support as well, because like I said, you didn't ask for this. You did step up to the plate and take the financial burden off of our foster care system, and you should be compensated for it. So, excuse me, you have a tremendous role that you're playing right now, and there are other states that are doing things for kinship caregivers, and that's what we're looking into now for our second project.
Yeah. Martha, I really do appreciate you calling and sharing your story with us. Let's go next to Alberta in Detroit. Alberta, welcome to the show.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you for this conversation. I want to speak, first of all, to Felicia and let her know that rules and laws can be changed, and she should make this an issue with her state representative and state senator to make those needed changes. And she can also request to go before a committee and share her story. So that's for Felicia. Yeah. And then I also want to talk about the abundance of loneliness that I find in some of our senior buildings. And when I go there, there's so much information that they don't have. For instance, Wayne County Community College is free for all seniors in Wayne County. They can go and take a plethora of courses, over 300 things they can take, and they don't even know about this, but we try to let them know. Also, seniors, I find, must stay active, must find laughter, joy, and fun in life. At Mac Alive, the organization that we founded, my family, over on Fisher and Mac, every Thursday we open our doors with a speaker and healthy lunch for any senior that wants to come. We also will be going to the Apple Orchard. We go to the DIA, the Detroit Historical Museum, the MAAH, and Frank and Move. It's all about staying engaged, staying active, if you want to stay alive.
Yeah. Yeah. Alberta, I really appreciate, of course, the call and the information. I mean, the idea of the things that are available for seniors to do and participate in, that's really important. And your point to Felicia about the potential for policy change, that's really important. And sometimes we think it's harder than just getting people together to advocate for that change, but it really is possible when people work together. Let's go next to Adam in Southfield. Adam, what's on your mind?
Hey, good morning, Detroit.
Hey.
So my mom has been living with MS for around 30 years, and she's in a nursing home now. But while she was still living at home, we found a program called the Medicaid Waiver Program, and it's for lower-income people. And the whole concept behind it is if you qualify for Medicaid, you can get on this. It's usually a waiting list, but once your name comes up, Medicaid comes in and they assess your needs. And, you know, normally it has all kinds of caps on what you can get from Medicaid for that kind of in-home help. But the waiver program, they waive all the caps, they assess what your needs are, and then they fund you so that you can then have a program that you can maintain in your home to take care of your loved ones and keeping them at home. And for our family, it was a game changer and a lifesaver. It enabled my mom to live independently for probably 10 years longer than she would have been able to. And, you know, we found out about this program from a friend of my mom's through one of her support groups for MS. But the reality is when you're going through these kind of caregiving, when you're in these positions where you need help in your home and things, everybody goes into it blind. You don't know what are the resources that are out there. And so you need those places, like we found a lot of help from the Area Agency on Aging, you know, but those resources to help you navigate that stuff, because there is help and stuff out there. You know, for Felicia, that might be a solution to help her with her son, you know, but if you don't know, you don't know.
Right.
So, right. Just wanted to bring that up and
Adam,
put that on the radar.
Adam, great information, and I'm glad you called to share it. That is one of the issues, too, is knowing what is available, where to access it, and you know how to make things easier where you can. I quickly want to go to Lee in Gross Point. She's got an important question. Lee, go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, I'm hearing a lot about policy change and what other states are doing, and all this sounds wonderful. However, I'm not hearing what the policies are. I'm not hearing how they're funded, And we need to get down to brass tacks. My father died with Alzheimer's. It was hideous. Thank goodness he did have enough income to be able to support a nursing home, which wasn't the best care for the money, by the way. And I really like Alberta's comments about community organizations. I really think we need more grassroots community organizations. I am retired. I would willingly, you know, participate in such a thing, but they're not being put out there that I can, that I've noticed.
Yeah.
And I think that's a wonderful way to go.
Yeah. Lee, I don't want to cut you off, but we're going to run out of time and I want to give our guests a chance to answer. Haley Harding, we weren't talking about other states necessarily. We were talking about other countries, but maybe there are other states doing this. Give us a sense of pay and cost and how other people are able to do this.
Other states, from what we know, they have, again, some of the most successful states are the ones that have been able to expand Medicaid and Medicare. These are states that are using their federal dollars just perhaps in a different way than what we're seeing in Michigan. And I know, as you just said, that doesn't necessarily like address like the community side to this, but we do know that in these states that are most successful, AARP has told us that the states most successful in supporting caregivers are the ones that have allies in the state house. And that's not necessarily a legislator. That can be a community member who is just really passionate about the issue, or a community group that's really passionate about the issue and says to their lawmakers, hey, we deserve more. We want more. And that's a normal thing to do, is to say, this is what we would like our government to look like. This is what we would like our representation to look like. Mm-hmm. And that's been successful in a lot of different places on making a change when it's needed.
Yeah. Sarah, before we end, I want to give you a chance to respond to that as well.
So just to the funding, a lot of the funding does come from the Health and Human Services Department, which is a federal allocation. They often go to these agencies like PACE. If you haven't heard of PACE, it's a elderly care daycare almost. They take, pick up, provide meals, but it all runs through Medicare, Medicaid, and they provide those resources and dollars through those specific allocations. So finding more resources that are able to fund through agencies is probably an easier solution, as it's already happening.
Okay. Haley Harding and Sarah Hall, reporters at the Detroit News. It was great to have both of you here to talk about caregiving and aging. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay. That is going to do it for us today. Come back tomorrow when we're going to continue talking about the upcoming elections here in Michigan. We're going to discuss the ballot proposals that Michiganders will be voting on for the midterms. Three of them on the ballot here in the state. We'll learn what they are, what both sides are on the arguments, and hear from you about how you're thinking about them. This is 101.9 WDET-FM, Detroit's NPR station, your connection to news, music, and conversation. We'll talk again tomorrow.